The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois.
Programming on WILL is made possible with support from the Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Beethoven's Fidelio Overture, Romance No. 2 with Sherbon Lupu, and Piano Concerto No. 5 with pianist Charles Rosen on Wednesday, April 7th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. For more information, call 333-6280.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening this morning. In this first part of the program, we'll be talking with a journalist from Bosnia, and we'll be talking a little bit about what has been happening in his country, Bosnia-Herzegovina, over the last couple of years. As you may recall, between 1992 and 1995, there was a war there. More than 200,000 people died. Another 2 million lost their homes. The fighting officially ended in 1995 with the Dayton Peace Accord. However, the country has yet to recover from the war. Unemployment there is high, the economy is stagnant, and some ethnic tensions do remain. We'll talk a little bit about, try to talk about what has been going on there recently, and also talk about the media in Bosnia and the role that it plays. We certainly would be happy to have questions or comments. Nerman Dermo is the director of the Press Council of Bosnia and Herzegovina. It's an organization that deals with complaints from the public about newspapers and magazines. He is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois to talk about journalism in this country and how it's carried out. And we're pleased that he could spend some time talking with us. Questions and comments, of course, are welcome from people who are listening. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself. I don't have a whole lot of background about you. And particularly, I guess I'm interested in how it is you got involved in journalism.
It was a pure accident. After I returned from the Great Britain, when I was spending 4 years during the war, a friend of mine who ran the private weekly, the most influential weekly, invited me to become part of the team. So I spent, let's say, 5.5 years with them. And I decided later on that it's more than enough, and I actually decided to accept the position of the director of the press secretariat.
Hmm. And just so people are clear, during the time that the war was going on, you and your family left.
Not on the beginning. First year we spent in Sarajevo. Yeah. And luckily we have opportunity to leave the country, and we settled ourselves in London in the UK.
Hmm. Okay. And this, I think the organization that you work for is interesting and unique. I don't know how many places have them. There is no equivalent organization in the United States.
There is three of them, actually.
Then I wasn't aware of their existence.
You got News Council in Minnesota. Let's say about 28 years old, and you have a local one in Hawaii, and you have one similar in Washington D.C. I don't know why do you. I mean, it's only three of them in Europe. In almost each country, except France, you will find one.
So, what exactly is the role of this? I mean, the one that you're involved in. What's its role?
Actually, the Press Council is the we call it self-regulatory body with main duty to accept the complaints from the public regarding the newspapers and the magazines. And that's one side of the story. The second one is, in the same time, they are trying to protect the interest of the journalist and editor. If some pressure or some threats, if somebody threatened them, so we are trying to, let's say, in a way, protect that. Council is composed 12 members of the council. Six of them are journalists and editors. Six of them are public members, like professors, judges. I mean, decent people. And we have international chairman. So the basic idea is to prevent government to introduce some regulation within the media department, just to ask the people from the papers to organize themselves and, let's say, to behave properly for the sake to prevent some law happen in the Bosnia regarding the media.
Mm. And is it also the idea that if someone reads something in a newspaper or someone does a story and they feel that it's inaccurate, that there's some problem with it, they can go to this organization and say, this reporter wrote this and it's not right?
Basically, there are three levels of the operation of the Press Council. Firstly, if you feel offended by the writing of the newspaper, you should go and speak directly to the editor. if it's failed, then you write to us, and we are trying to, let's say, negotiate between you and the editor. If that doesn't happen, then there is a, let's say, regular council meeting, five of, or six of them per year, when the council members deciding who is wrong, who is right. Mm. But basically, there is no teeth in that policy. The only thing the council can do is, I mean, make some public statement, send the, our decision to the paper and ask them to do that. But we can't punish anybody. We can't take your license off or fine you financially. That's, I mean, we don't like to do that. Mm.
I can imagine there would be a lot of stories where there was more than one way of looking at things. Are there many cases where you can actually, there is a story where there has been a complaint and you can say, well, there's something here that's flat out wrong? Or is it more of the case that you have one set of people who look at it one way and one set of people who look at it another way, and that you can't really say, yes, these people are right and these people are wrong?
Actually, it's very difficult to answer that question. That's the reason we include in council journalists and editors and the public members. So actually, it's up to them to decide. It's 12 of them. They are talking, they are discussing, and we are trying to reach any adjudication anonymously. But if not, something like that not happen, then the majority votes will be, I mean, the conclusion one. Hmm.
I'd like to have you talk a little bit about what life is like and what's happening in Bosnia-Herzegovina today. And as people will recall, there were a series of wars, civil wars, that happened in what was Yugoslavia. After the point, the collapse of the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia started to come apart. This was a place where there was a good deal of ethnic violence and conflict that was ended officially by the Dayton Peace Accords in 1995, effectively creating two quasi-independent states. The Muslim Croat Federation and the Republika Srpska. There is an overall government, but the problem is that each of these states, they have their own governments, they have their own police force, they have their own army, and people look at that and say, well, effectively, what we've got here is two separate and independent states, and the idea that this is somehow one country doesn't quite reflect the reality. And I guess what is it really? What does it look like to you?
Few things. First of all, I mean, Dayton, the best thing about Dayton is this: it stopped the war. Mm-hmm. And later on, actually, they established two, we call them entity, with all prerogative of the states. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, they are trying to make it a little bit more serious country, let's say, I would say like that. They just reached agreement that we will have a unique army, so it will not be two army. Mm-hmm. The police will remain on the entity level, but there are some kind of the state police. And anyway, we have too many administration. We have 10 cantons, two entity, one state, altogether 23 level of the government. I mean, for the tiny Bosnia, 4 million people, it's more than enough. That's one part of the problem. Second one, country was completely destroyed by the war. Infrastructure is getting better thanks to the international donations and donors, but there is no economy. I mean, there is, but in a poor state of the stage. Third problem is, a lot of people who were qualified are not in the country. They are worldwide spread. And, I mean, the lack of the educated people, in 10 years' time, we will be in the same level as 10 years ago, before the war. But it will be altogether 20 years, and it's very difficult to fill that gap in a short period of the time. There's then still ethnic tension between the people because of the fact that most wanted people for the war crimes are still free. And while they are free, I mean, there will be no stable peace on that part of the world. I have a feeling if internationals just withdraw their troops now, in the 10 years, we will have another war. Because those are they are not arrested. They are not in front of Hague Tribunal.
Mm-hmm. I did read a story about the armies unifying, and that I know that a lot of people think that that's really significant, that there will be one command, everybody's going to wear the same uniform. The idea is that now some of those things may be superficial, somebody's not. But that you think that that's a really significant step, the unifying of the army?
I mean, it's hard to explain. It is because they made a deal. Before 2 years ago, you couldn't even bring them to the table to talk about something. All of them were obstructing each other, and their main duty is to obstruct the other party. Now, at least they made some kind of agreement, and they will try to do something. The bad things about that, they choose minister to be somebody who didn't even serve the army because he was not capable to do that. But, I mean, it's transitional period of the time, and every country has to pass. It will take some time. This is procedure, but I mean, the fact that they finally reach agreement about anything, it's good enough. Mm.
What exactly is the relationship between the presidents of the two entities and the president of Bosnia-Herzegovina?
There is no president. There is presidency on the Bosnia-Herzegovina level. It's three of them, member of each nation. I mean, Croat, Serb, and Bosniak, or Muslim, as you prefer. Mm. And actually, they are... I'm free to say that they are more like king in the UK, let's say. They have no real power, actually. They are just the figures that because any country has to have a presidency or president, but real power is in the entity.
Do you think that it is possible that at some time you would look at Bosnia-Herzegovina and see a truly functional, multi-ethnic, multi-party state, or are we simply going to stay with essentially what we've got now, which is these two entities, and they're going to continue to be very separate?
It's truly multi-ethnical and truly multi-political states. It's not normal states and states in the rules of the law, but I believe time will come, maybe in 5-10 years' time, if we join European Union, that some condition has to be satisfied. And it will also depend on the behavior of our neighbors, Serbia and Croatia, because those parties who are in charge in Bosnia are, let's say, purely national party, like Serbian Democratic Party and HDZ, which is Croatian Democrat Union. And they always look for the signal from the Belgrade and Zagreb. So it will depend on the changes in that part of the world, how Bosnia will function in the future. Mm.
Do the governments in Croatia and Serbia, are they involved in politics in Bosnia-Herzegovina?
Definitely, very. I mean, it depends of the government in that country. Previous government in Croatia was more, I mean, in favor of Bosnia and Herzegovina. We are waiting to see what will happen with this one because they have the newly elected government. In Serbia, actually, I'm more pessimistic about Serbia because on the last election, over the 35% of the Serbian population, I mean, Serbian Montenegro population, vote for the ultra-radical party. Mm-hmm. And their leader is Vojislav Šešelj, who is in Haag tribunal accused for the war crimes during the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Let me reintroduce our guest, Nerma Dermo. He is director of the Press Council of Bosnia and Herzegovina. This is an organization that deals with complaints from the public about newspapers and magazines. He's had some experience in the world of journalism himself. He's here visiting the campus, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just recently, there has been an outbreak of violence in Kosovo, and the worst since the end of the war there 5 years ago. And there continues to be conflict there between ethnic Albanians and Serbs. And people, I think, look there at Kosovo and think that perhaps things haven't changed very much there either since the end of the fighting. Do people in Bosnia worry? Do they look at that and worry about that?
Probably yes, but I mean, I'm not sure. It will sound ridiculous to you, but Kosovo is too far from Bosnia comparing to what we have 10 years ago. I mean, we have a war in one town in Bosnia, and in second one they behave like everything is normal. So Kosovo as an issue is, of course, very important for the Bosniaks and Bosnian people, but I don't believe that they are too concerned. Many reasons for that. I mean, we have huge international troops there. They will not allow any major conflict to happen. And most of the Bosnian believe that Kosovo will become independent in 5 or 10 or maybe, I don't know how long from here. But the problem is what will happen after the Kosovo become independent. Are they going to join Albania or something like that, which can cause another kind of problem? I'm not sure what's going to happen there, but I mean, I'm not too concerned about happening in Kosovo.
Just to go back to though something you said earlier, you think that in Bosnia, if it were not for the presence of foreign peacekeepers, it wouldn't be very long before people were fighting again?
It's my opinion. I mean, because the fact that the leaders who start the war are still free and they have huge crowd behind them that support them, hide them, feed them and everything else, that clearly give me some signal that if internationals are not in Bosnia, that we could expect new war sooner than we even can think of.
Have people in Bosnia been watching the Milosevic trial in The Hague?
In the beginning of that, it was very badly covered. Even the major TV station didn't send anybody there. Then the few really independent weeklies started huge argument about that. And finally, they found some money or whatever and reporters to send there. And for the last, let's say, 2 years, that coverage was well done. Now we are looking to see the Milosevic defense because it was only prosecutors who were talking and sometime Milosevic himself. And I'm not sure. There is some opinion in Bosnia that if you are in the Hague, that you are already guilty. The question is, I would like to know what kind of thing they can prove. He's definitely guilty, but he's too smart, and I believe he destroyed many, many, many things that could jeopardize him. But I'm not sure how many of those accusations they will be able to prove.
Well, I have read some things about the way that people in Belgrade, in Serbia, are looking at the trial and looking at this question of why it is that people aren't more outraged about what it is that Mr. Milosevic has been accused of doing, and that the media there in Serbia tend to paint this as foreigners putting Serbia on trial and seem to want to spin it as just another case of persecution of Serbia by outsiders. Is that the way that it looks, and are there people in the Serb Republic who would see it that way too?
Probably they could see on that way, but I mean, that's not true. It's very difficult for them to accept the fact that Milosevic was running that country for, let's say, 15 years and doing no good for them. Mm-hmm. Even if it looked in the beginning that he is going to keep the most Serbs in one state, which was his idea to make something like Great Serbia. But basically, it has something to do with the last election. If you realize that after 15 years of Milosevic era and something like some Djindjic, the late president of the government of Serbia, they are again returning to vote for the ultra-radical party, I would say nationalistic party run by the Vojislav Šešelj. I mean, it's probably very, very difficult for them to accept the fact that there are some people who are guilty among the Serbs. It's not all the people, but one by one. I mean, if Milosevic is guilty, let him to defend himself.
Two Bosnian Serb leaders have been indicted by the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague, Radovan Karadzic and General Ratko Mladic. And they are probably, of those people who have been indicted and who are still at large, they're probably the two most prominent people on that list. And I know that a lot of people look at that and say, you know, it's been 9 years after Dayton, and here these two guys are still at large, and wonder, first of all, why it is they haven't been arrested, and also wonder whether, in fact, they ever will be.
I mean, there are few thousand stories about them. One of them says that they made a deal with the internationals when they promised to them that they are going to be out of the politics, out of everything, but just don't arrest us and send us to the Hague Tribunal. The second story is that they have so many allies among their people that hide them, feed them, support them. Third one is that maybe they are not even in that part of the world, they are somewhere else. you know, the conspiracy theory. Hmm. But the fact that they didn't arrest it, and they didn't arrest, they are not in Hague. I mean, it's very, very most worrying things for the Bosnian people.
Well, this is, and when you read about it and people, reporters ask the forces that are there, well, why haven't you done something? They say, well, look, you've got to understand just how difficult this would be. If we tried to use force to arrest them, it would no doubt involve some very serious fighting. It's possible that the people we're trying to arrest might be killed in the process, and they don't seem to have any sense of real urgency about arresting them. And I suppose you have to admit that, in fact, yeah, those things are true. Does the government there in Bosnia-Herzegovina, do they know where these two men are? And if they wanted to, could they arrest them and hand them over?
Look at what happened in Serbia. I mean, the top one was arrested and delivered to The Hague, Milosevic. Mm-hmm. So if there is a political will in the Republika Srpska, they could easily do that. I mean, with the help of the S4 troops there, it will not cause many, many deaths as they are trying to do, to persuade the people that something like that will happen. But what will happen if they don't finish in the Hague? How many dead people will we have after that? I mean, if you put that as a counter-argument, you will realize that there is no argument in the favor of the theory that it's impossible to arrest them. Yeah. I mean, they could do it easily.
Do you think that the popular opinion would not favor their, in Republika Srpska, popular opinion would not favor their being handed over to the Hague?
No.
But in the long run, when you look at healing the wounds from the war, you think that having them go on trial, do you think that is important?
It is. I mean, if they are, as they were talking about themselves, that they are people who are just defending their people, their nation. I mean, there is nothing wrong. Then you can freely go there and explain it to the judges in the Hague Tribunal, and they let you free. But I believe that they did so many bad things, so many atrocities committed under their command. I mean, they will never come back from the Hague.
Hmm. I believe that there is supposed to be a special war crimes court set up this year in Sarajevo. At least that I read that there was this plan to do this in part to try to lessen the workload on the tribunal in The Hague, to make it a little easier and make it more possible that all of this is going to be finished by, I think, 2010. It's supposed to all be done. Is that actually now going to happen?
Yeah, I heard about the idea that not only Sarajevo to establish, let's say, department of the Hague Tribunal in Sarajevo, Banja Luka and Mostar, because to make it easy and not to have too many cases in front of Hague Tribunal in Den Haag. But how it will go, and do we have the judges who are able to do that or not, I'm not sure, because recently they've just appointed, let's say, maybe a few thousand new judges. They just replaced the old one and introduced new ones, like people who never was in that profession, for the sake of objectivity, neutrality, and those stuff. And it was supervised by the internationals. And are they able and capable to do that? I'm not sure.
Hmm. Do you think that if that actually did happen and there were trials there in Banja Luka or in Sarajevo, in Mostar, so you're one of the cities in each that represents each of the three groups, that those people would see those as having greater legitimacy than what was going on in The Hague, because here this is essentially in our hometown.
Yeah, and the basic idea is to make those courts, multinational. So you will have in each of them some internationals, some Bosniaks, some Serbs, some Croats in each of them. So it will have, base to say to consider them as an international court of justice, let's say, in the local area.
Mm-hmm. We're about at our midpoint here, and let me again introduce our guest. We're talking with Nerman Dermo. He's director of the Press Council of Bosnia and Herzegovina. This is an organization there that deals with complaints from the public about newspapers and magazines. He's a former journalist himself. He's here spending some time in the United States and at the U of I campus talking about things like professional ethics and journalism. He's been good enough to come and spend a little time talking with us. Questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. One of the things that I'm interested in having you talk about is the media, and particularly whether the media reflects ethnic division, or to the extent to which maybe media has tried to repair ethnic division and the damage that was caused by the war.
Actually, you can see many different ways how to see actually media in Bosnia. Regarding with the media that supports ethnic division or the media that used to be tool in the war, we have to watch them from the two different aspects. It depends how of the ownerships of that media. If the media is publicly owned, they are not doing that, not at all. But there are, let's say, 185 TV and radio stations in Bosnia and over 250 press outlets. And let's say 85 or 90% of them are privately owned. So in that way, it's very hardly anybody could regulate them and to ask them to behave properly. You still have a lot of the media in Bosnia that support some ethnic divisions in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But fortunately, a couple of years ago, under the supervision of the Office of the High Representative, they created some independent body called the Communication Regulatory Agency. It's with main duty to regulate electronic media in Bosnia and Herzegovina, radio and TV station. And they are able actually to punish them, to take their license off, to fine them financially. And after that period, we have more clear and more normal, let's say, situation in the TV and radio station. The problem, the major problem we are facing is in the press. Mm-hmm. 250 different dailies and weeklies. All of them except one privately owned, and they have no regulation at all. Even the press council is not able to regulate them. And what will happen next, and already happening in a way, the state decided to introduce laws. The first of them was Defamation Act, and the second one is the freedom to the access to the information. Because of the first one, we already have more than 300 cases pending on courts about defamation, about ethnics, so many different type of defamation is already done in Bosnia. What will happen next? We don't know. Out of 300, and probably even now more cases, only one has been solved. So what will happen next? I really don't know.
Tell me again, how many print?
250.
That seems like an awful for a country this size. That's an lot of press.
And the reason for that is very, very, simple. During the war, many internationals decided to help those small papers to have the second side of the story, to be independent of any political influence. And after 9 years, those small papers, they didn't actually prepare themselves for the market-oriented economy. So for the sake to survive, they are doing many, many, different and usually bad things, like going more yellow, using some very influential party leaders as their sponsor, or they are just become the part of a certain financial or political establishment. So it's very, very difficult not to control them, to articulate them, I would say.
Is it clear when you look at them what their political agenda is?
The best example for that is the last election. You could clearly see from the newspaper who, to whom, they belong, who are they supporting, And, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And is the issue of ownership, is that always clear? Or sometimes it's not clear who it is, who is the financial power behind them?
Formally, I mean, it has to be clear. But informally, there are many ways that you never know who is behind a certain paper or radio station. Hmm.
We have a caller and would certainly welcome others if you'd like to join in the conversation. 333-9455, that's for here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Champaign County, and that's line one. Hello.
Hi. You mentioned that there were atrocities all around. I'm trying to find out some information about Akim Seku. Am I saying that correctly? Hello?
We hear you. I guess my guest is shaking his head, so I think maybe he's not sure who it is.
Well, what is the music there, by the way? I'm hearing music coming down another channel, apparently. I'll try and ignore it. Well, I'm a little surprised. I was thinking that the New York Times has little about him, but they actually editorialized about him. He was an operative for the KLA, and now he's head of some kind of UN training force. But he is one of the Kosovo Albanians that is accused of war crimes, and he's actually accused of helping the U.S. in the Krajina with the Krajina Serbs when they were ethnically cleansed from that region, which is part of the Croatian part of the story. So he was an operative that was mainly sort of for hire and going to where the action was. But he apparently has some kind of UN job, I guess, maybe to keep him on a leash or something. I don't understand. But maybe I'm saying the name so wrong. It's spelled in English A-G-I-M-C-E-K-U.
Are you talking about the Albanian war leader, Čeku?
Čeku.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, he seems to be a prime candidate to show some balance, that not just Serbians are being tried in the aftermath, and he was apparently detained in Slovenia last October, but
he was set free quickly after that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. There are rumors that he was the part of the army, Croatian army, that expelled the Serbs from the Knin region, or I don't know which one exactly. And later on, when the problem in Kosovo started, he went there to help, as they said, their own people to fight for freedom. I don't know how familiar you are with the situation in that part of the world, but there is it's always like there is not only one side who is to be blamed. There are always individuals from all sides that's done something which is wrong.
I thought I was making that point it's not just rumors that he was involved in the Krajina. I mean, that's pretty well. I think he brags about it, actually. And he was working with Wesley Clark, actually, somewhat at the time, and the Croatian authority. So what I was saying was that I know there have been some other than Serbian perpetrators charged, but the predominant focus has always been the Serbians, and I think it would be exemplary for Čeku to actually at least be thoroughly investigated, and also any U.S. role in as well. Okay.
It will come definitely sooner or later. You have many examples in Bosnia, let's say the Bosnia Croats or Bosnia Muslim, who believe that they will never going to be accused. They finally get accused, then they will have to fight for to prove that they are not guilty.
Well, it seems to me that the U.S. role was, as opposed to being a moderating role, was actually by supporting some of the more fanatic factions, was actually helped stir up the mess to some extent. That again will perhaps is an arguable point, but it's one that's not made very often, and it'd be good to hear at least some discussion on that. And I will go, and I'll try not to call in the next hour, since
All right.
Okay.
Well,
thank
fine,
you.
Whatever. One of the things that's interesting, though, one of the things that I did read in trying to read up on the subject is that there apparently was the former Bosnian Muslim leader, Alija Izetbegović, who died recently, apparently was being investigated for war crimes.
We also heard that he was one, and also the late president of the Croatia, Franjo Tuđman.
Franjo Tuđman, yeah.
Was supposed to be, I mean, at least accused, something like that. Whether it's the problem with that is they just published that from the Hague Tribunal on the day he died, and it was left a very bad feeling in the mouth of everybody who's if they wanted to accuse him, you could do it. I mean, there is no problem. Or to discover that he's supposed to go to Hague, okay, you should wait at least 7 or 10 days and then publish it. But on the day of his funeral, to say something like that, I mean, it's not appropriate.
Well, did that lead people to question whether or not that it was true?
I mean,
or did they just think that it was sort of bad manners to do it like that?
I really don't know, but most of friends of mine have a feeling that actually he was not a perfect person, definitely, but he was a huge amateur, and we have paid huge price for his amateurism.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone in Bloomington, Illinois, on line 4. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have two brief questions. One is, Bosnia-Herzegovina has been said to have a great deal of democracy and relatively little economic support from the international community. It had at one time something like 70% unemployment, and some of the democracy was also a bit strange because it could even be the voting could be recalled if the voting fell along ethnic lines. Could you first comment about the situation in terms of the economic infrastructure and how it's progressing and the unemployment? And secondly, could you say something about the publicity or recognition, positive or negative, of trials that are taking place abroad concerning Bosnia-Herzegovina, particularly the trial of Karadzic in terms of the Catherine McKinnon and the woman from Omarska bringing a class action suit in a U.S. Federal court. Has that gotten any publicity in Bosnia-Herzegovina and any reaction to that kind of thing? Thank you.
I'll try to answer the first question. I don't know, is the level of the unemployment 70%? I believe it's about between 40 and 45. I mean, that's official data we have. And about democracy. Democracy, I mean, it's in the poor states, destroyed by the war. It's in its transitional part of the route. It's on the very low level. We officially have multi-party system, and we officially have multi-religious and multi-national country, but still we can't say that democracy really works in Bosnia. In that sense. About second publicity of the trial abroad, we have heard about case that some courts in the States decided to against Karadzic, but I mean there are so many cases and against Karadzic that and people always like to hear about them, and particularly in federal part of the Bosnia to speak about them, but we don't expect a lot of those court verdicts abroad against Karadzic.
This one did get a multi-million dollar judgment. It's a
But he doesn't.
It's symbolic.
Yeah, symbolic. He will not even have headache because
of
that.
Right, exactly, yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. One of the things that I read was that apparently there was a survey conducted in 2002 by the United Nations, and one of the things that they found was that two-thirds of Bosnia-Herzegovina's young people said they wanted to leave.
Yeah, that percentage is even higher now. I believe if you ask any young person in let's say from 18 to 25, you will receive the answer: if I have opportunity, I will definitely leave the country. Hmm.
Are older people? Do they also tend to be that discouraged about what's going on there now?
I mean, I'm not sure, but depend of the how they. And the way they live, depend of their income. some of them, even that have a low income, will stay in because they don't like to go and they spend all their lives there, so they are not going to move. But there are some of them who are in the very old, but some have some children or relatives abroad, and they would also gladly go. And also the fact that we have a lot of suicide, particularly in the old age people, they can't survive out of their pension or something like that. It's, I mean, something that should concern Bosnian government.
Yeah. Just also to pick up on another question that the last caller asked, about international financial aid and the fact that apparently in recent years it's been going down and down and down.
It was huge, I believe. But there are no trace how it spent, how people in Bosnia spent it. I mean, most of that money that officially arrived to help Bosnia to build its infrastructure is probably used properly. But I had a chance to see an article in the New York Times, let's say a year ago, that said that, let's say, even a few billion euro missing from that part of the money. How it happened and when that money finished, nobody knows for sure.
Let's talk with another caller here, Mohammed, in line number two. Hello.
Morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, your guests might have talked about this a little bit more earlier when I didn't have a chance to hear you, but looking to the future and the dynamic of what's going to happen in Bosnia and Herzegovina, to what extent do you think that there are forces in Croatia and in Serbia that favor the status quo, like the current two-way division, and to what extent do they stand in the way of, like, Bosnia-Herzegovina attaining some viability as a nation and that sort of, well, just how do you think it might play out?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that, please?
We touched on it a little bit, but I think it's a good question, and we can talk some more about that.
it's very difficult to predict what will happen, but basically Bosnia and Herzegovina is recognized as a state, and every official that arrives from any part of the world, from the states, from the UN, will always say something in that favor. The second reason I believe that they will not succeed in their wishes to divide Bosnia is the priority for the people in their country is changed. They are not. You can't mobilize Serbian population or maybe Croatian population to go and fight for peace of the Bosnia, part of the Bosnia, in the same time having low salary, social structure, social life in their country is awful also as in my country. So on the long term, I believe that, and the third reason is if they join the European Union, so something, I mean, you will always have some local right-wingers that will, would like to see Bosnia divided and would like to interfere more or less with the Bosnia as a state, but nothing major will happen.
I see. Well, that's sort of how it seemed to me, too. Or just as an aside, I remember being in Belgrade when a few days after Milosevic was taken to The Hague, and I had a discussion in the train station with a taxi driver and a waiter. And I remember the people there, in a couple other discussions, seemed very open to Milosevic being criticized at that point in time. You know, like maybe this is, to what extent do you think that Belgrade is a little more politically advanced than, like, I heard a lot of the support for the atrocities in Bosnia and Herzegovina was like almost like a rural dynamic, you know, when like the more conservative elements were in the rural areas and the city was a little bit more cosmopolitan and a little more tolerant. Do you think that's true? Or?
I believe that it's true that Belgrade as a city is more, they understood what happened in Bosnia, but people on the village, on the countryside of Serbia simply doesn't know that and don't like to believe that some their leaders could make some atrocity or order that atrocity, and they simply don't want to believe that.
All right, thanks. That's very interesting, and thanks a lot for your time.
All right, thanks for the call. If you think back to what happened after the Soviet Union was no more and after Tito was no more and Yugoslavia, what was Yugoslavia, started to come apart, two of the major leaders started yanking and started pulling in opposite directions. Franjo Tuđman in Croatia started yanking one way, and at least there was the possibility of Croatia and Slovenia becoming independent and identifying and hooking up with Europe and kind of pulling that way. And Tudjman, of course, wanted to grab as much territory as he could. Milosevic was doing the same thing, sort of pulling in the opposite direction, wanting to grab as much territory as he could. And though that was the driving force early on in a lot of the fighting, at least one you could imagine that possibly those kinds of entities could actually be viable independent states. There are a lot of smaller pieces like Kosovo, for example, or maybe Bosnia-Herzegovina. You have to ask the question, well, is it actually possible for them to be a viable state? And I wonder whether you think that that's actually true, particularly for Bosnia, whether that it actually can be an independent state, or that somewhere down the road you have to think that it would have to continue to have some kind of an affiliation with a larger entity, which makes you think that those kind of connections, either with Serbia or with Croatia, probably are always going to be there.
No doubt that it will be very difficult, but Bosnia is an independent state, and they will remain an independent state. I mean, I don't know, those from the neighbor would like that, but it will happen. But I have to remind you something. You just forget that before the appearance of the Tudjman, we have Milosevic, we have all those leaders, not Tudjman, we have Ivica Račan, who used to be the chairman of the Communist Party in Croatia. And it was 11 or 12 Congress of Communist Party in Belgrade. So Tudjman still didn't win the election in Croatia. Milosevic clearly showed to all others what is he going to do. He wanted to force them to stay in the Yugoslavia, but on his way. Mm-hmm. And he made the deal with Milan Kučan, the president of Slovenia. Actually, Kučan was the smartest guy, and he realized exactly what's going to happen, and they decided to leave. They left that Congress. After them, Croats leader and Croats member of the Congress left. And then Milosevic tried to make a joke out of that, that they would leave whatever he said. So actually, he helped Tudjman to get elected.
Milosevic?
Yeah. In a way, if he has more patience to listen what those from Slovenia and Croatia have to say, probably, I mean, it would be more difficult for Tudjman to get in charge. Hmm.
Is it the hope in long run people in Bosnia that they're going to become part of the European Economic Union?
I believe so. Actually, there are some conditions Bosnia has to satisfy, let's say 118 of them, we satisfied 18 of them, so there is additional 100 to be satisfied, and we believe by 2010 we'll join the European Union.
Hmm. In the meantime, do I have this right that Bosnia is interested in joining NATO?
Yeah, they are trying to do that, and they have strong promises that if they elect, if they unite army as one and a few other stuff, that one of the preconditions to get join the NATO.
What do people in Bosnia feel that they gain by joining NATO?
I mean, they will feel more secure, basically. They believe that nobody will able to attack them as they did before. And I mean, they are ready to pay the price for that.
Yeah. So that it really does... It does have to do with security concerns. And I guess I asked the question because some people have looked at countries in Europe that formerly were Warsaw Pact countries who have been interested in joining NATO. Some people have said, well, really what that's about is it's a backdoor way into the EU. It's sort of a first step because it's actually easier to get into NATO than it is into the EU. But it sounds like you're saying, at least for people in Bosnia, they actually have... It is a real matter of security concerns, and that's why they want to be in NATO.
I believe that's the first one. The second one is definitely, as you said, the back door for the joining European Union.
We'll see if we can get one more caller here, at least. Champagne, line one. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question sort of off subject, but just out of curiosity. Is there no female leader or feminine voices coming out of all the change in government? I remember reading a book by Slavenka Drakulic a few years ago, and I just don't hear any female voices in leadership roles. I'll just hang up and listen to the answer.
There are a few of them, but you are right, completely, less and less. They are actually trying, all parties in Bosnia, and I believe in Croatia, they are trying to have enough ladies in the government, but just to show to their voters that, I mean, we have ladies, we are not only men in the government, but basically, I mean, you are right, there are not many, too many voices from that part.
Well, I think we're just about the point where we're going to have to stop because we've come to the end of the time. I want to thank you very much for taking some time and talking with us.
Thank you.
I guess Nerman Dermo, he's director of the Press Council of Bosnia and Herzegovina. This is an organization that deals with complaints from the public about papers and magazines in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And he's a former journalist himself, spending some time here visiting on the campus of the University of Illinois. Our program, Focus 580, made possible in part with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium at 203 North Vine in Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. The broadcast is also made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Andy's Hallmark with cards, gift wrap, and candles, and the Reading Group, a nonprofit clinic helping children and youth with reading and writing problems. They're on the web at readinggroup.org. Coming up a little bit later today as part of the Afternoon Magazine, opportunity to ask some questions about taxes. April 15th is just a couple of weeks away now. On the program today, two experts will be with us to answer your questions, Marty Verdick and Steve Winterstein of RSM McGladrey's Tax Department in Champaign. They'll be on the show following the 1 o'clock news. Tom Rogers sitting in today as host in place of Celeste Quinn. The program itself gets underway at noon, with the usual mix of news from NPR, the BBC, and AM 580. We'll also have weather in depth at 12:35. Then the show again gets underway at noon here on AM 580. Coming up in the next part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Haitian-American writer Edwige Dandicat. She is now out with a new novel. In fact, she's spending some time traveling around the country talking about it. It's titled The Dewbreaker, and it is getting a lot of positive attention. She's been called most talented Haitian-American writers, and certainly one of America's most talented younger writers. She's on tour. She's in Chicago today and will be talking with us by telephone about her new book. So that's coming up in the next part of Focus 580. Just a quick mention that also tomorrow we'll have some musicians from the Spirit of Fez tour, the Festival of World Sacred Music. And they have been traveling across the country. This is a tour that brings together musicians who are of three different faiths, Christian, Muslim, and Jew, and they are performing sacred music from each of their traditions, and the idea is that it promotes greater sort of understanding among people of different faiths. They'll be here at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts giving two performances, and this is their only stop in the Midwest. They're going to be on the East Coast and the West Coast, but in the middle of the country, this is the only place that they're going to be. We'll be talking with several people, Terrence Grace, who's a stage and film director, Gabriel Meyer, who is the co-founder and director of the Sulha Peace Project for the Reconciliation of Israel, and Yaqub Hussein, he's a performer from Palestine. So those folks will be joining us tomorrow in the first hour of the show. We're going to take a break here. We'll have an update on the markets and news, so stay tuned.
With this look at the ag markets, set a minute before.